Roberts is supreme. My revenge for Bork. Someone's been removing some brushweed. That someone is me. Someone's been removing some brushweed. The burden of the presidency. It's tough work being a president. Got out of that hoeing and raking.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yeah. And so glad to be with you today. Here we are on a gorgeous Tuesday afternoon in Southwest Florida, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida. I hope it's a nice day where you're at as well. God, I couldn't wait to get back to the show this weekend. So much happened. And first of all, you know, I'm a happy guy. All of you football fans know I'm a happy guy because I've mentioned many times and I'm a big Ohio State Buckeye fan. Those are my boys and, they did me right proud over the weekend over the, Texas Longhorns. Great game. Way to go, Bucks. Go, Bucks. Anyway, enough for the sports news. There was plenty of other news to go along with it, too. Lots and lots and lots to talk about today. We do hope you'll join us here on the show today. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. God, you know, I don't know where to begin today. There was so much that happened over the weekend. I really don't. First of all, Friday afternoon, wouldn't you know, the 9/11 Commission report came out that the Republicans have been dreading, and sure enough, it said everything that we thought it would. And, of course, the Republicans are acting like it's a non-event, like it never happened, and we knew they would. And then we had Junior Bush's interview with Matt Lauer. And, then, you know, I have to tell you one thing right now. Did you see that smartass in his interview with Matt Lauer? I think Matt Lauer is a very respectful guy. I really do. I think he treats the president with respect, especially, I guess they were in the Oval Office on this one. And I thought he was very respectful. And some of the questions he asked were tough questions. And, you know, Bush being the little, I don't know, he's got that complex. I don't know. He's got some sort of a complex anyway. I can't put my finger on it right now, but it's just one of those things that he just can't seem to he just can't seem to socialize. He can't seem to intermingle with somebody and not have that smart ass smirk, that little that little Caesar attitude that he's got about him. If I was Matt Lauer and he put his hand on me like he did Matt Lauer there with, hey, wait just a minute, I think I would have knocked him on his ass. That's what he deserves. Evidently, being the rich little boy with a silver spoon in his mouth that he's had all of his life, no one's ever been able to give him any guff, I guess. And so he thinks he can get away with just anything that he wants to, and does. I think it's disgusting the way he acts, and he acted like a trained monkey in that interview. He really did. They trained him to say the same words over and over. Well, we don't want the enemy to adjust, and it was legal. My lawyer said it was legal. My lawyers looked at it. You know, he's patronizing. He's arrogant. He's slimy. And I'm not going to discuss specifics, Matt. I just can't discuss specifics, but we are keeping your family safe. I do want you to know that. Man, I don't know. it was, at the very least, it was disgusting. And then we had the 9/11 movie. I forget what the official title of it is. I wonder how many of you watched it both nights. I do wonder how many of you watched it both nights. Any of you see it both nights? I did. I watched the whole thing for both nights, and I thought he was just absolutely. Well, the show obviously spent a lot of money on it. I can't complain about the quality of it. The quality of it was just fine. They really did a nice job with the quality of it. It was movie quality. It really was. It's just the content. Just the content. My God. And we'll talk about that throughout the program today. And of course, you want to talk about it 866-546-5254. And then we had 9/11 yesterday. You know, for the fifth year in a row, I am so glad that the 9/11 observance is over with. I've had enough. And yes, I do honor and respect the dead. That's not what I mean. Yes, and yes, I think of what happened almost every day on 9/11, just like nearly every other American does. Who could ever forget it? How could you forget it? But this is America, land of the free. And as Junior Bush so often reminds us, land of the free and home of the brave. And really, in my opinion, it's time for the brave to move on. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have an observance of 9/11 each year, but a whole day of self-pity and political propaganda is a little bit too much for me. The Bush administration is so fond of saying that 9/11 was a day that changed everything. Well, they are correct. They're not correct in as much as our daily lives have changed so drastically. We still go to school. We still go to work. We go to church, attend to sporting events, you know, socialize, go shopping, basically do the things we've always done. Where everything has changed for the average citizen is that now we're expected to keep our mouths shut and say nothing negative about our government, or fear being labeled as a traitor or a malcontent leftist of some kind. That's the difference. You know, keeping your mouth shut and accept the fear-mongering and politicizing of 9/11 that this administration is so hell-bent upon doing. You know, be afraid. Be very afraid. That's the message. The Junior Bush administration has correctly recognized the fact that at least many millions of adult Americans' behavior is, well, it's like that of children. You tell them what to do, and they'll do it, either because they aren't mature enough to think for themselves yet, or because they fear the repercussions of not behaving as Daddy Bush would want you to behave. Or, well, maybe Daddy Bush isn't the right description. Maybe Big Brother Bush is more appropriate in that case. But, you know, these so-called leaders exhibit not a hint of conscience when they exploit 9/11 for political gain. And my God, have they ever done that in the past 2 days? They did it at their last political convention, and they've done it nearly every single day since. They've pounced on every opportunity to use the deaths of the 3,000 victims of 9/11 for their own personal and political and financial gain, and that point is absolutely unarguable. Not only that, but why are so many millions of Americans seemingly almost unable to grasp the fact that Junior Bush and his colleagues have grossly compounded the horror of 9/11. How can it be that the number of deaths of our military personnel nearly equaling the number of souls who lost their lives on 9/11 really don't seem to have the same significance to the American public? And the 20,000 more who have been grievously injured and maimed, and the untold numbers of innocent Iraqis and Afghanis who have died. What about them? Yes, I watched the ceremony at Ground Zero yesterday, and I felt the same raw emotions as every other American who grieves for this horrible loss of life. I saw the tears running down the cheeks of countless civilians, police, and firefighters, and I grieve with them, as we all do. But my question is, where are the collective tears of America for the nearly 3,000 dead bodies of our kids coming home in flag-draped coffins at Dover, Delaware? Where's the ceremony for them? Where are the tears? You know, to the American people, these individual tragedies are no more than nameless, faceless bodies being buried without the pomp and ceremony that we witnessed yesterday. And just because we Americans... Well, it really bothers me. It really does. And just because we're Americans, do we not have tears for the tens of thousands of Iraqi and Afghani men and women and children? Where's the love and compassion for those dead souls? Are we so righteous and arrogant as a nation that indiscriminate killings of brown people is acceptable? And nothing more than collateral damage? You know, I often think about this. What hell has this nation descended into when our national psyche has sunk to such a despicable state of malaise and callousness for our earthly brothers and sisters of these other countries? I was heartsick last night as I thought about the events of the day, the memories of the dead, the thought of our nation being so corrupted and defiled and debased by the Bush administration, a group of people so vile and so morally bankrupt with nothing more than their own greed and selfishness in their thoughts. And for most of us, it was a day to think about death, the needless deaths of many thousands of Americans, both civilian and military. The deaths of many thousands of innocent Iraqis and Afghanis. And the almost unthinkable notion that if the present course of action of this nation is allowed to continue, we may well be witnessing the death of our nation. For America is suffering a terrible blow at the moment. Our liberties, our civil rights, our freedoms and privacy, they're all being threatened by an enemy within our borders. And it's all because this current hideous regime is engaged in a massive campaign of fear-mongering and propaganda which flies in the face of the American way of life. The message coming from the Junior Bush administration yesterday was not one of sorrow and concern. It was a message of fear. Be afraid, be very afraid, but we'll protect you. We have to put a stop to this. In November, we have to be united in our resolve to change the course that America's on right now, change the course back to one of hope, of honor, and respect to the rest of the peoples of the world. Then and only then will this country be able to heal from the wounds of 9/11. Only then will we return to being the America we know we can and should be. It's going to be a long road back. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello? Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Next caller. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on yesterday and that piece of crap that ABC put on. First of all, it's not exactly right when you say that they make the most of September 11th every year. That's not true. If it's not an election year, you see, it's quite understated. If you look at what they did in 2003 or in 2005, it wasn't anything to speak of. In fact, in 2005, they basically had a moment of silence. So they only want to remember the dead and commemorate, really, when it's a big election year. That's the most hypocritical part.
Well, they certainly know how to take take advantage of it.
Yeah, but and then if you look deeper, you know, you were talking about everything that this country's cost us. Well, okay, we're 5 years out after 9/11. Bin Laden hasn't been caught. We now have the Pakistani government saying that they will not try and capture him if he has a peaceful life. Homeland Security has cut Homeland Security funding on New York City to the extent that Hillary Clinton and that right-wing nut representative Pete King actually joined forces to complain to Homeland Security to say that that was unacceptable. And they've cut funds on first responders, you know, policemen and firemen in New York City. So, I mean, are these people really concerned about terrorism? I think not.
Only when it benefits them politically. That's the only time.
You know, and in terms of what we've lost, I would think that, you know, Bin Laden has got almost everything that he wants. You know, we have, a radicalized government that's great for his recruitment. Most of our freedoms have been shut down. The Republicans are always saying they hate our freedoms. Well, most of them are being taken away. So aside from all of us converting to Islam, Osama's getting just about everything he could possibly wish for, including a bunch of sitting ducks sitting right there in Iraq. He doesn't even have to come to the U.S. now. It saves him the trip.
I think you're exactly right. By any measure you can name, Bin Laden has won this war on terror. The towers are down. Millions of Americans are afraid of their own shadows. Americans have lost some of their privacy and freedoms. There's thousands of Americans dead. Even more thousands of Iraqis are dead. Saddam Hussein, hey, how about that? He's mortal enemy of Bin Laden. He's in prison. We took care of him for him. You know, America's gone bankrupt fighting a war that Bush says is a war on terrorists, when for the most part, actually, it's a military engagement of an occupying army against Iraqi citizens who hate him for being in their country. And Bin Laden is free.
And furthermore, think of all that we could spend on this war that we're spending for Iraq. We could equip every airplane with anti-missile equipment. We could have better surveillance of old Soviet nuclear sites where nuclear materials are padlocked in refrigerators. We could have, you know, better nuclear surveillance equipment here and at airports. We could check our ports better. We can do so much to improve our security if we weren't fighting this stupid war in Iraq.
That's absolutely true. You know, how much more of a victory could there be for Bin Laden than that? You know, even if and when we capture and kill him, who's lost the most here? You throw it on the scales and see which ways it tips. How many Al Qaeda have we killed? How many Al Qaeda were there on 9/11, and how many are there now? We don't have any way of knowing for certain, but most of the experts say there's a hell of a lot more of them now than there was on 9/11. So who's winning, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so in every way you look at it, we're fighting it in a stupid way. And now to turn to that ABC piece of crap really fast. First of all, you know, I think that, I don't know if a lot of your listeners are aware of this, but, you know, it's possible that Bill Clinton is going to take legal action against ABC because of the defamations of Sandy Berger and Madeleine Albright, things that contradicted directly what were in the 9/11 report. And, you know, they presented it as the absolute truth when it was a dramatized piece of fiction. So that's number one. American Airlines may be taking legal action against Disney because they presented it as, you know, American Airlines was negligent in not screening Mohammed Atta when he got on the plane, and it wasn't even American. And, you know, a lot of people are boycotting and really upset. So, you know, I don't think it was worth it for them.
No, definitely not. And I, you know, it's one of those things. You know, Walt Disney, I mean, he was a good and decent man, and here he's had his name sullied and besmirched by these modern-day money grubbers for a buck, or, you know, ABC, Disney Corporation. I mean, it's shameful. It really is.
Yeah, well, Walt Disney wasn't that great of a man, but this is another day's topic. He was, you know, friendly with the Nazis and many other things, but that's another day's topic. But Yeah, we see now the lengths that these networks will go to be, you know, in the pocket of the right wing. You know, instead of just presenting an accurate depiction of what happened, you know, not pointing fingers or pointing fingers at both sides, you know, they had to made it poignantly political, and they've now jeopardized their whole product. And what I was going to say, what a lot of people are doing, if some of your listeners want to do this too, well, you can very simply block out all ABC stations, including ABC, Lifetime, A&E, ESPN, just block them out of your system, like with a lock, and they know immediately when you block something out, and then write to them and say, this is the reason. And if thousands of people do that, then they're going to start, you know, like understanding why that people are blocking out ABC.
Well, it was a piece of crap, and I'm sure a lot of people have let them know it by now.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks, guys.
Good to hear from you. Let's go over to the other line. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi. You made a comment about be afraid, be very afraid, we'll protect you, which is what Bush's entire message is. Well, I'm dating myself here. I'm one of the duck and cover generation.
Me too.
Yeah. I agree, and I also grew up in the Seattle area, which meant that at any time there were anywhere from 20 to 200 ICBMs targeted on that entire area at any time. So from as far back as I can remember, I fully expected at any time to be turned into radioactive glass. That was just the way I grew up. I'm not buying this crap you put out, and I never did. I'm not. Okay, 9/11 was tragic. I'm sorry. But the way they keep digging these people up, he reminds me of Ted Bundy.
That's right.
You know, with his necrophilia. It's just fear, 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 fear.
Well, it was
you can't live on this fear.
It was that. It was that event. It was that that Pearl Harbor-like event that the PNAC group said they needed.
Yeah. Yes, but even the people who lived through Pearl Harbor, they got past it. You can't keep wallowing in this fear. You have to learn to say, okay, this threat is hanging over your head. Live with it.
That's right. That's right. It's time to, I mean, always remember, but move on.
Yeah, exactly. And this nation as a whole has to pick up itself and say, okay, that's life. Live with it.
That's for sure. Hey, thanks for your call.
No problem.
Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Well, it's, 20 minutes after the hour. We got some phone lines lit up there. Interesting, interesting political races. Hey, and speaking of political races, we're going to have a good guest coming on at 4:30. A lot of you know Tony Trupiano. He's running for the 11th Congressional District up in Michigan. And Tony's going to be with us at 4:30 today. I like Tony. I've met him, and we've talked, and I've had him on the show before. And last time we were in Washington, we had a good long conversation with Tony. And he's a heck of a guy, and you make a great congressman. So we're going to have him on around 4:30 today. All right? So be ready for that. Let's go back to the phone line. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
You were talking about the overuse of, or whatever you call it, of 9/11 by the Bushes. I watched 60 Minutes, the last part of it, Sunday, and they had some 9/11 children on there. Did you by chance see that?
I did see a bit of that, yes.
And it was so good. It was, they were, most of them were small when it happened, and some of them weren't even born. And they gravitate toward one another because, you know, they understand one another. And those kids were, I thought, were just terrific. And anyway, they've got like a club, and this woman, she's having them to do things for poor people, like they went down to Costa Rica to help out people out down there, people that are just living in like a tin, almost like a fence or something. They put in a bathroom for one down there, and they've done all kinds of things like that. She said it helps them, And did you know they never mentioned the war one time?
Mm.
Not one time did those kids mention the war. If they did, it was, you know, it was taken out. But, and they said that it upset them for them to keep showing that over and over and over again because it was sort of a jest. And one boy said he hated everybody for a long time, and he said he's finally better at that. But it bothers them to see those scenes over and over and over again. And, you know, so I think you're correct in that sense is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, who are you going to listen to? Listen to the people who lost loved ones, in my opinion.
Right, right. And, you know, the propaganda angle of this that they've used is it's just been so overwhelming. They've exceeded my expectations, I can tell you that. They've gone way beyond what I ever thought they would.
And, you know, I just had to turn. I tried to watch him,
it's hard.
His middle of that movie speech, and I just had to turn it down. I just can't make myself sometimes, but he's basically it's the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't I don't know why they just didn't come right on in the middle of it like they did there and say, and now a word from our sponsor, George W. Bush.
Right. Well, there's somebody talking about some organization that has authority over contributions to political people, and they're talking about investigating who paid for that.
Yeah, yeah. I there's a lot of conjecture on who paid for it, and I haven't gotten to the bottom of it either. I'm working on it, but it's going to be tough to trace that.
Yeah, one thing I heard was Mellencamp again.
Mm-hmm. Richard Mellencamp.
And, you know, Mr. Moon is into a lot of that stuff, too.
Yes, he is. And
the Messiah that's doing what Jesus could not do.
Yeah.
He's a big friend of the Bushes, too.
Yes, he is.
And also Jerry Falwell.
Right. Hey, thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Let's see. Where are we going to go right now? It's 25. I won't go back to the phones right now. I'll wait just a little bit for that, okay? We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
I am the son of a grassland farmer, Western Oklahoma, 1943. I always felt grateful to live in the land of the free. I gave up my father to South Korea, the mind of my brother to Vietnam. Now there's a banker who says I must give up my land. There are four generations of blood in this topsoil, four generations of love on this farm. Before I give up, I would gladly give up my right arm. What are we making weapons for? Why keep on feeding the war?
Was a soldier. He was so like my father. He was so much like me. To be a good comrade was the best that he dreamed he could be. He gave up his future to revolution, his life to a battle that just can't be won. All peace is not leaving, to leave at the point. of Leningrad, the sound of the dime, the cut of the gold. I remember the moments I prayed I'd never grow old. What are we making weapons for? Like a prisoner, a slave to the ways of the powers that be. And I fear for my children as I fear for the future I see. Tell me, how can it be we're still fighting each other? What does it take for people to learn? If our song is not song as a chorus, we surely will burn. What are we making weapons for? Why keep on feeding the war machine? We take it right out of the mouths of our babies. Take it away from the hands of the poor.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show. Had an interesting little break there. I was looking at the discussion taking place on the chat room, and actually had a couple of people said they didn't like John Denver, and you know, that's why there's lots of different kinds of music, but it was shocking to me. First time I ever heard anybody say he didn't like John Denver. I think John Denver's probably the reason I took up the guitar and banjo and so forth many, many years ago. I do a fair bit of singing myself, and probably know all the John Denver songs, so you wouldn't want to come to my house and have me entertain you or to any local stage here or anything, because you probably hear a lot of John Denver stuff, and you just wouldn't like it at all. Well, we like to have fun with you on that. Glad you're with us here on the Guy James Show today. We invite you to give us a call, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And while we're at it, let's just go to the phones here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hiya, Bill.
Say, listen, just wanted to know, Guy, did you get your portion of that flank steak served up by the High State Buckeyes there on Saturday?
Ah, yes.
Did we carve a piece out of that bull?
Yeah, I'm afraid the horns weren't quite up to it. Weren't up to it. Bevo just didn't have what it took to get the job done. But you know, they had a wonderful team last year, and they're missing that great quarterback of theirs this year. So, our team's a little bit improved, and our defense was much better than I figured they might be. So, my goodness, it was fun. I got to say that.
Guy, which way should I start today? Should I start on a serious note?
Well, do what
or
you.
Or should I take in the start on a light note?
Do what you like.
How about on a light note?
All right.
Did you hear the rumor that I guess American Airlines is going to get a little bit of that Mickey Mouse money?
Mickey Mouse money.
They're going to take and sue. They're talking lawsuit.
Yeah, I did hear they're talking that. I hope they do get some of it.
So they're going to empty out a little bit of the Mickey Mouse's pockets there. I hope so.
Well, that'll devastate.
And I just hope that a couple of them kind of join in. I can think of a few people.
Well, how about Madeline Albright and
Sandy Berger?
Oh, Sandy Berger and the poor woman. I can't think of her name right now. The ambassador at Yemen.
They all got good suits, I believe.
Boy, that's
slander, especially Sandy Berger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, if anybody's got it, I believe he does.
That
guy was running around doing it. But I guess, you know, they said, from what I understand in that movie, you know, I didn't watch it, but they had a guy close enough to Bin Laden there to shiv in him.
Yeah, that's the way the movie made it look. It certainly did.
But that wasn't to be, was it?
No. And, you know, I will say one thing. I will say one thing in their favor. They did show that disclaimer more often than I thought they would.
Uh-huh.
They showed a big old disclaimer on there probably, maybe twice the first night and then at the start the second night and maybe two more times during the show. And they did say that they took took license with it, you know, journalistic license. I can't think of the word right now. But they said some of it was based on fiction and all. And I really didn't expect to hear him see that. I really didn't. I was surprised.
Boy, I had a busy weekend, Guy. I was just trying to keep myself busy because, of course, except for the game, there wasn't anything I wanted to see on TV. And I was on the computer doing a little bit of research and that. And then, of course, when I'm like that, I got some stuff that I do in my workshop that I repair things. And so when I'm keeping my hands busy, I like to listen to something. So sort of on a serious note, so I go to White Rose, and, of course, I'm going to download your site. And I come up just – I didn't look for a date or anything. This is honest to God truth. And this is for your listeners out there. And I says, well, I'm going to click on and listen to something. So the day that I listened to was – and I think everybody – that loves to listen to you should go and listen to May the 31st of 06. And when it was done, I had tears in my eyes.
May the 31st?
It was just, I know Jim called you afterwards on that. And that was, it's the way I feel completely. I mean, I couldn't put it in the words like you put it, Guy.
Well, thank you.
But
thank you.
It was just absolutely fabulous, and it was one of the best opening shows that I've ever heard you done.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I do appreciate that.
It was really fantastic.
Sometimes, you know, there are days that you can just enunciate and say everything that you want to say, and it just comes out just the way you want it, and there are other days that you sound like a bubbling idiot, and that's just the way it is with me. There are days that, you know, you feel like, well, gee, I said that just the way I wanted to say and got the point across. And other days you think, I bet they've got no idea what I'm talking about.
if the listeners are smart, they want to hear one of your best shows, listen to the first 14 minutes of your show on May the 31st of 06.
Well, guys, I'll have to listen to it myself again.
You'll have to, Guy, because it was really fantastic. I've got a question for you, Guy.
Yeah.
Do you ever go to the CES site? It's the Congressional Services for the Legislators.
No.
And they, huh?
No, I don't.
Okay, go on your computer. Just do a Google search on CES. And all the information that it's a service that's provided to the people who work for the congressmen and senators.
Oh, okay.
And they go there and they get information. And, you know, I called you about that arms sales to Pakistan, kind of made light of it. But I did a Google search and got this CES and found out that, you know, these other F-16s that we've sold to Pakistan, they also believe that they've already got those nuclear capable.
Mm.
And there was some hell raised to begin with, but...
You know, isn't it something, Bill, all the hell that's been raised over Iran getting a nuke, and here you've got two arch enemies next door to one another, India and Pakistan, both have threatened each other with nukes I don't know how many times, and there's actually been times where our American government was pretty sure it was going to happen.
And well, how about our own troops over there, Guy? What happens if we do? I mean, if they're talking about 14 permanent bases there, and all of a sudden, you know, that's not stable there in Pakistan at all.
Yeah.
And how if all of a sudden we get in a big breakout war with Pakistan and they take and they bomb our bases over there in Iraq?
You just wait and see. The day's coming when Pakistan, they're going to, first of all, they're going to be sorry that they befriended George Bush. And we'll end up taking them down some of these days. You wait. It always happens with a guy like Musharraf. Always.
Yeah. Listen, how about ending on a light note?
Yeah.
Okay. You heard the rumor about the three world leaders getting together with the space station?
No.
They had to come up with a mission, and whoever had come up with the best mission for the space station, they would get their mission and they could do with it what they wanted to. So they had Putin and then the chairman there in China and Bush, and they had to go before a panel and say what they wanted to do with this space station. So Putin goes before him and he says, "Well, we want to take this space station to the moon and hover above the moon and conduct experiments and that," and he told them all about it, and he said, okay. So chairman comes in from China, and he takes and he says, well, we want to take this thing to Mars. I said, you take to Mars? And, oh, yeah, you know, we're so much closer to the planets and that, the research we could do. And, yeah, that sounds pretty good. So then they bring Bush in. I said, Bush, he said, what would you like to do with this space station? And he said, well, I want to take it to the sun. And they said, the sun? Well, you got to be kidding me. You take this space station, the sun's going to burn right up. He says, oh, he says, I got that figured out. He says, we're going to go at night.
Very good. I love a good laugh, but that's a good one. That's
listen,
a beauty.
Guy. A great show, and your listeners, listen to that show, 53106. You're going to love it.
All right, thank you.
Listen, thanks a lot, and you have a good show today, Guy.
Bye now. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Got it figured out. Going to do it at night. I'm going to have to go back and listen to the tape of this show so I can write that whole, write down that joke so I can tell somebody that, because I'll never remember it. That's funny. That's really funny. Thank you, Bill. What do we got? It's 3:42 right now. And don't forget, we got Tony Trupiano coming up at 4:30. You know, while all the 9/11 stuff was taking place over the weekend and yesterday and all, it's such a shame. On Saturday, they had a meeting in Washington, a little seminar, And I got to see a tape of it. And a gentleman by the name of Edward Genham, who was U.S. ambassador to Jordan. Think about this. He was the Jordanian. He was the U.S. ambassador to Jordan when 9/11 happened. And he was talking on this panel called the War on Terrorism 5 years in. And Genham recalled on how September 11th, at the embassy there in Amman, Jordan, a crowd began to gather outside the embassy. And by this time, they were worried. America had been attacked by Muslim terrorists on its own soil. And Genham and the embassy staff, they worried that the gathering crowd was perhaps a bunch of people going to attack them. Perhaps part of some, coordinated offensive all the way around the world. But they were wrong. The crowd was there to express its solidarity with America after its great loss. This is in Amman, Jordan. And over the course of the next week, Genham recalled that 3,800 Jordanians, individual Jordanians, came to the embassy to express their grief and their condolences to America. And then he finished up his statement by saying, if another 9/11 had happened today, claiming thousands of American civilians, no one would come. No one would come. And unfortunately, he's right. What an illustration to show how things have changed and how bad these Bushes have messed things up. And they keep coming. In his speech last night, in his little propaganda bit he did it during the intermission, let's all go to the lobby and get some popcorn time last night. That's what it seemed like. Bush is saying, well, they're gonna strike again. Well, hell yes, they're gonna strike again. And I don't know about you, but I think the only question is the two questions: when are they gonna strike again, and where? Those are the questions. And they like to brag that we haven't been attacked in 5 years. Well, that's great, but so what? How long was it after 1993 before they struck again? Is Bush really saying that they haven't hit us because of our due diligence, and that's the only reason? And moreover, I would love to ask Bush this question in front of the cameras, in front of America. I'd really like to be able to ask him this question in front of everybody and make him answer it. How has our war, not our war, how has the Bush war in Iraq changed whether or not they're going to strike us again in any way whatsoever? What has happened in Iraq? Somebody please tell me what's happened in Iraq since we've been there that'll keep the terrorists from doing another 9/11, only worse. Anything at all? Anything? What the hell does one of those things have to do with the other? Nothing. $318 billion I heard this morning, and there's not one scintilla of proof that we're even a little bit safer now than we were before. A terrorist can get in his car and drive over the United States-Canada border any day he desires and wreak havoc on this country. You think I'm kidding? I'm saying that I could show you right now where you could drive a convoy of trucks loaded with nukes, biological weapons, chemical weapons, fertilizer bombs, anything. I could show you some places on that border where you could drive anything you want over that border anytime you want, and nobody would be the wiser. And people have actually bought this we're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them here bullshit? I mean, how goddamn stupid does a person have to be to believe a line like that? You couldn't have the brains of a toad if you believe that one. Somebody please tell me, what does it have to do with we're safer now, that Iraq war? How has that made us safer? All it has done is multiply exponentially the numbers of terrorists that there are who hate America. That's what he's accomplished there. Let's take a call. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, this is Sarge. How you doing?
Hi, Sarge.
Hey, listen, you know, you were talking about if 9/11 happened today, nobody would answer the call. And I agree totally, because even the American people are sending out the wrong message. When I was in the military, I saw so much of the American attitude that, like in Germany, for instance, we own your country. You know, so would you quit speaking that foreign language and speak American?
Yeah.
And that attitude has been there for, oh gosh, I understand, even since my dad was in the military. But today it's even worse. You know, we don't care about the other people, and you hear a lot of these people saying, "Let's cut the foreign aid," when we don't even give 1% of our GNP to foreign aid. We have got to wake up in this country, Guy. We are facing one of the worst times in our history. This is probably our darkest hour. And
you know what, Sarge? You know what really scares me? I think it's only twilight. I think it can get a whole lot darker.
I think you're right, and you know, I really don't know what we're going to do, because I talk to people and they tell me, well, I'm trying to make a living. I'm having to work 14, 16 hours a day. And then I'll ask them, well, what have you got that you can give up that you absolutely don't need, and spend that time paying attention to what's going on in your country, because sooner or later you're going to have to give that stuff up. And plus, it's just so easy. It's like, for instance, you can go to powersandmorrison.com, and in 30 minutes you can be updated, because we got such a variety of things for people to look at, and yet people will not take the time, Guy. And that's what scares the crap out of me, is we don't care. And like Bruce Burt said, and I applaud him so much for it, democracy is not a spectator sport. We have got to be active. We've got to be informed. We've got to listen to the left and just learn who in the heck we are.
That's right. I absolutely agree.
It scares me, Guy. It really does. And, you know, I served in two branches of this military, and I paid a heavy price for my patriotism. And I just want to sit down and cry and say, what in the hell is going on in my country? Somebody, please stand up and say, enough already. But, yep. God, I don't hear it, and I'm so disappointed. What in the world did I sacrifice for? What did I sacrifice for? But thanks to people like you and Mike Malloy and Bob and Bruce and all them, I see hope, but we got to wake up. Oh, God, we got to.
There's always hope.
I'm going to let you go, and appreciate you letting me say that. And everybody is invited to come by Powers and Morrison. We have a message board, and we hope Guy James will drop in and join and maybe leave a post or two.
And by the way, Sarge, I posted another phone number on the chat room there for you. It's our Washington Bureau number, which is not a toll-free number.
Pass that on to Victor. And
okay.
Get you set up. And I sure appreciate you talking with him, because I think you'll really enjoy his story. He is some kind of awesome guy, and his columns are great. We're just so proud of him.
Well, good.
Thank you, Guy.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Thank you. Ah, yes. Johnny O. Johnny O writes, says, did you hear Ellie Mae this morning berate Keith Olbermann? I missed it. I did miss it. And I don't think they podcast. We've got this local, oh my God, right wing talk show in the morning. It's a typical morning show from like 5:30 till 9 o'clock. You know, kind of the warm up act for Laura Ingraham. And there's this gal on here. A lot of the people locally here call her Ellie Mae, And it's the number one rated, that's the station I used to be on. It's the number one rated AM station in the area. But if you're right wing, I don't care if you, you know, I don't care what, if you're right wing, they'll hire. In fact, let me just tell you something. I know a guy that worked there that had a good job at that radio station. And, boy, I shouldn't be telling this, should I? I know a guy that worked there, and he was on an on-air personality. And they called a meeting one day and had their consultant there. Now, keep in mind, they have Hannity, they have Rush, they've got all the right-wingers on there, Dennis Prager, and just, you know, every single one of them they've got. And they had their consultant conduct this meeting and told all the radio personalities there that on the other shifts that weren't, you know, when the syndicated shows weren't on, you keep your mouth shut if you've got anything to say that doesn't jibe with Rush or Hannity. If you've got an opinion other than what those two have, don't you dare say it on the air. Don't you dare. Well, my friend quit. Didn't take him long at all. So that's the truth, and that's how it is. And you have to wonder how many radio stations are like that all across this country. I rather imagine quite a few. Quite a few. And I'm even wondering lately if one that purports to be on the left, an organization that purports to be on the left, I wonder if they haven't told their people to keep their mouth shut about a certain subject. And you know what I'm talking about if you can read between the lines here, and I know some of you do. But imagine that. Imagine working on a radio station. You're used to having a morning show or, you know, and well-known in the community. Been a radio personality for many years, and they bring some pissant consultant in. Said, now if you say anything that disagrees with Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, you'll be gone. So watch what you say. Imagine that. But that's how it is. And I certainly hope, and for those of you who didn't get to hear Keith Overman last night, I'm going to play that in a little while after the top of the hour. Keith is on a roll, is he not? I think without question, Keith, in my mind, Keith is probably the most well-spoken, most eloquent person that speaks in any political tones whatsoever that I know of. Keith is lately, God, he's been amazing with his commentaries lately, and another great one last night, and we're going to play it after the top of the hour, after the news at the top of the hour. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Hope you'll be able to join us for the program. Yeah, I hate to get anything started now. We're getting up close to the top of the hour. Going back to 9/11, a couple of short notes here yesterday. How many of you remember? You know what tomorrow is, the 13th? You know what tomorrow, the anniversary, 9/13, tomorrow's the 5th anniversary of? Anybody know? No? Let's see. Nobody's got it on the chat room yet. But tomorrow is the 5th anniversary of all of the Bin Laden family members being rounded up, meeting at a secret location, and being flown out of this country before some of them could even be interviewed by the FBI. Picked them up someplace in Kentucky, some of them. Some of them were here as students. Some of them were here visiting. And I don't know the number of them. But anyway, it's Prince Bandar's group there, the royal family. And our government, when no airplanes were allowed to fly, no airplanes were allowed to fly other than specifically authorized by the White House or the U.S. military, got a private plane and flew the Bin Laden family out of this country before the FBI could talk to them all. Now, you and I can't take toothpaste on an airplane today, but the FBI and whoever had the authorization allowed these dudes to just fly right out of the country 2 days after the worst disaster that ever happened here. And we knew by that time that a good many of those people that did that perpetrated that horrible act. We knew it, that many of them were from Saudi Arabia. And yet we allowed a charter flight to leave this country filled with people from the bin Laden family and the royal family of Saudi Arabia, allowed them to leave here? Said they feared for their lives. I don't know. Yes, I heard threats. I heard threats against people back in those days, against Islamic people. I did. But these kind of people that were flown out of the country, they weren't exactly the kind that had to mingle with just every Tom, Dick, and Harry. These people had money, big money. And they got a pass. They got to fly right out of this country without having to explain, without having to be interviewed. And yet you and I go through all this crap we got to go through at the airport now. And I'm not saying I disagree with all of it, because I don't. But I'm just saying, isn't it something if you know the right people? If your name is bin Laden, if you're Prince Bandar or the royal family and you wanted to fly out of this country, all you got to do is call the White House. Just call, probably got a private number. I wouldn't doubt but a bit, but Bandar's got a private number right straight into the Oval Office. And they flew their asses right out of this country. No problem at all. See you, boys. See you when you get back. That's just, it's fascinating to me that that kind of stuff goes on. It really is. Well, we're getting up there close to the top of the hour. Kind of a laid-back program here today so far. We hope you'll stick around. We got Tony Trupiano coming up, going to talk about his congressional campaign at 4:30 Eastern Time for all of you in other parts of the country. And we hope you'll stick around. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network, and we're going to be back right after the news, so don't go away.
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. Embassy in Damascus was unsuccessfully attacked today by four armed Islamic militants, three of whom were killed by Syrian guards outside the compound. The fourth was wounded and taken into custody. No Americans were hurt. Syria says the gunmen were connected to an Al-Qaeda splinter group. Voters are going to the polls in nine states today, including Rhode Island, where Senate Republican Lincoln Chafee is facing a tough challenge in his bid for renomination. Two members of the Atlantis crew have completed a 6.5-hour spacewalk, which was flawless, but for losing a bolt, spring, and washer, which floated away from them. Two more spacewalks are scheduled before Atlantis returns to Earth a week from tomorrow. A federal study concludes that despite the fact that many Gulf War veterans suffer from a variety of medical problems, there is no such thing as Gulf War syndrome. Iran's president is offering to help Iraq improve its security and stability. The offer is the result of talks today between Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Tehran. The two will meet again tomorrow. It's al-Maliki's first official visit to the Islamic Republic. Iran is clarifying its weekend offer to suspend its nuclear enrichment for 2 months. Now Tehran is saying that those 2 months will not begin prior to the start of talks with the six powers about Iran's nuclear program. An Israeli military judge has ordered the release of as many as 21 Hamas lawmakers, but his order is on hold for 48 hours so Israeli prosecutors can lodge an appeal. In Yemen, at least 40 people were killed and dozens injured today in a stampede at a pre-election campaign rally for Yemen's president. The two-week teachers' strike in Detroit is over. The teachers reaching an agreement last night with the school district, clearing the way for school to finally begin this Thursday, 10 days late. Southern California firefighters are battling a stubborn brush fire in northern Los Angeles County, which caused a shutdown of Interstate 5 yesterday and is still burning out of control. Pope Benedict returned to his native Bavaria today, where he celebrated Mass for 230,000 people. Hurricane Florence heading towards the North Atlantic after battering Bermuda and causing a lot of damage but no death. Tropical Storm Gordon is right behind Florence and expected to become a hurricane in the next couple of days, but not expected to hit Bermuda. And a new study shows that the United States is still the most popular country in the world for foreign students, but the U.S. share of the international education market has fallen in the past 4 years from 25% to 22%. You're listening to the Quality News Network. It's now 2.5 minutes past the hour. Business news is coming up.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Hewlett-Packard Board Chair Patricia Dunn is stepping down in January but will remain a member of the HP board. The announcement follows her questionable tactics in investigating board leaks to the media. Those tactics, which may have been illegal, are now under review by Congress, the FBI, and the California Attorney General. Bristol-Myers Squibb CEO Peter Dolan has been fired following the recommendation of a federal monitor and partly due to a federal investigation into his efforts to block a Canadian company from producing a generic version of the Bristol-Myers drug Plavix. The Commerce Department reports that the U.S. trade deficit hit a record of $68 billion in July, largely the result of high oil prices. The Justice Department has reportedly ended its probe of Freddie Mac without seeking any criminal charges. The mortgage finance giant was being investigated for a multi-billion dollar accounting error. A Texas furniture owner who is a huge Chicago Bears fan advertised that any furniture bought from him over Labor Day would be free if the Bears shut out the Packers this past weekend. They did. And now he's happily refunding more than $300,000 to more than 250 customers who took advantage of the offer. Gold is trading at $595.80 an ounce this hour. Light sweet crude down 61 cents, trading at $65 even. That's $65 a barrel. On Wall Street, all the markets are up. The Dow up 79 at 11,475. NASDAQ is up 27 at 2199. And the S&P up 9 at 1308. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. Time now 5 minutes past the hour.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We've got another, well, almost another hour to go. We got Tony Tufiano as our guest coming up at the bottom of this hour. Candidate for the 11th District in Michigan for the Congress of the United States. And too bad we don't have 435 people in Congress is honest and open. There's guys like Tony Tufiano and Dennis Kucinich and a few others I can think of. Boy, it's just too bad. It really is. Hey, I promise, so I'm going to do this. Some of you I know have told me you didn't hear this last night. It's going to take a few minutes, but I'm going to play it anyway. And some of you that have heard it might want to hear it again. But here we go with Keith.
Tonight, a special comment on why we are here. Half a lifetime ago, I worked in that now empty space behind me. And for 40 days after the attacks, I worked here again, trying to make sense of what happened and was yet to happen as a reporter. And all the time, I knew that the very air I breathed contained the remains of thousands of people, including four of my own friends, two in the planes, and as I discovered from those missing posters, seared still into my soul, two more in the towers. And I knew as well that this was the pyre for hundreds of New York policemen and firemen, of whom my family can claim half a dozen or more as our ancestors. I belabor this to emphasize that for me this was and is and always shall be personal. And anyone who claims that I and others like me are soft or have forgotten the lessons of what happened here is at best a grasping, opportunistic dilettante, and at worst, an idiot, whether he is a commentator or a vice president or a president. However, of all the things those of us who were here 5 years ago could have forecast, of all the nightmares that unfolded before our eyes and the others that unfolded only in our minds, none of us could have predicted this. 5 years later, this space is still empty. 5 years later, there is no memorial to the dead. 5 years later, there is no building rising to show with proud defiance that we would not have our America wrung from us by cowards and criminals. 5 years later, this country's wound is still open. 5 years later, this country's mass grave is still unmarked. 5 years later, this is still just a background for a photo op. It is beyond shameful. At the dedication of the Gettysburg Memorial, barely 4 months after the last soldier staggered from another Pennsylvania field, Mr. Lincoln said, "We cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract." Lincoln used those words to immortalize their sacrifice. Today, our leaders could use those same words to rationalize their own reprehensible inaction. We cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground, so we won't. Instead, they bicker and buckpass. They thwart private efforts and jostle to claim credit for initiatives that go nowhere. They spend the money on irrelevant wars and elaborate self-congratulations and buying off columnists to write how good a job they're doing instead of doing any job at all. 5 years later, Mr. Bush, we are still fighting the terrorists on these streets, and look carefully, sir, on these 16 empty acres, the terrorists are clearly still winning. And in a crime against every victim here and every patriotic sentiment you mouthed but did not enact, you have done nothing about it. And there is something worse still than this vast gaping hole in this city and in the fabric of our nation. There is its symbolism of the promise unfulfilled, the urgent oath reduced to lazy execution. The only positive on 9/11 and the days and weeks that so slowly and painfully followed it was the unanimous humanity here and throughout the country. The government, the president in particular, was given every possible measure of support. Those who did not belong to his party tabled that. Those who doubted the mechanics of his election ignored that. Those who wondered of his qualifications forgot that. History teaches us that nearly unanimous support of a government cannot be taken away from that government by its critics. It can only be squandered by those who use it not to heal a nation's wounds, but to take political advantage. Terrorists did not come and steal our newly regained sense of being American first and political 50th, nor did the Democrats, nor did the media, nor did the people. The president and those around him did that. They promised bipartisanship and then showed that to them bipartisanship meant that their party would rule and the rest would have to follow or be branded with ever-escalating hysteria as morally or intellectually confused, as appeasers, as those who, in the vice president's words yesterday, validate the strategy of the terrorists. They promised protection and then showed that to them protection meant going to war against a despot whose hand they had once shaken, a despot who we now learn from our own Senate Intelligence Committee hated al-Qaeda as much as we did. The polite phrase for how so many of us were duped into supporting a war on the false premise that it had something to do with 9/11 is lying by implication. The impolite phrase is impeachable offense. Not once in now 5 years has this president ever offered to assume responsibility for the failures that led to this empty space and to this, the current and curdled version of our beloved country. Still, there is a snapping flame from a final candle of respect and fairness. Even his most virulent critics have never suggested that he alone bears the full brunt of the blame for 9/11. Half the time, in fact, this president has been so gently treated that he has seemed not even to be the man most responsible for anything in his own administration. Yet what is happening this very night? A miniseries created, influenced, possibly financed by the most radical and cold of domestic political Machiavellis continues to be televised into our homes. The documented truths of the last 15 years are replaced by bald-faced lies. The talking points of the current regime parroted, the whole sorry story blurred by spin to make the party out of office seem vacillating and impotent, and the party in office seem like the only option. How dare you, Mr. President? after taking cynical advantage of the unanimity and love and transmuting both into fraudulent war and needless death, after monstrously transforming it into fear and suspicion and turning that fear into the campaign slogan of three elections, how dare you or those around you ever spin 9/11? Just as the terrorists have succeeded, are still succeeding, as long as there is no memorial and no construction here at Ground Zero, so too have they succeeded and are still succeeding, as long as this government uses 9/11 as a wedge to pit Americans against Americans. This is an odd point to cite a television program, especially one from March of 1960. But as Disney's continuing sellout of the truth and of this country suggests, even television programs can be powerful things. And long ago, a series called The Twilight Zone broadcast a riveting episode entitled The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. In brief, a meteor sparks rumors of an invasion by extraterrestrials disguised as humans. The electricity goes out. A neighbor pleads for calm. Suddenly, his car and only his car starts. Someone suggests he must be the alien. Then another man's lights go on. As charges and suspicion and panic overtake the street, guns are inevitably produced. An alien is shot. But then he turns out to be just another neighbor returning from having gone for help. The camera pulls back to a nearby hill, where two extraterrestrials are seen, finally, manipulating a small device that can jam electricity. The veteran tells his novice that there is no need to actually attack, that you just turn off a few of the human machines, and then they pick the most dangerous enemy they can find, and it is themselves. And then in perhaps his finest piece of writing, Rod Serling sums it up with words of remarkable prescience, given where we find ourselves tonight. The tools of conquest, he said, do not necessarily come with bombs and explosions and fallout. There are weapons that are simply thoughts, attitudes, prejudices, to be found only in the minds of men. For the record, he said, prejudices can kill and suspicion can destroy, and a thoughtless, frightened search for a scapegoat has a fallout all its own for the children and the children yet unborn. When those who dissent are told time and time again, as we will be, if not tonight by the president, then tomorrow by his portable public chorus, that he is preserving our freedom, but that if we use any of that freedom, we are somehow un-American. When we are scolded, that if we merely question, we have forgotten the lessons of 9/11. Look into this empty space behind me, and the bipartisanship upon which this administration also did not build, and tell me this. Who has left this hole in the ground? We have not forgotten, Mr. President. You have. May this country forgive you.
Yes, may this country forgive you indeed. A long clip, but nonetheless, I felt it was important for some people who hadn't heard that to hear today. You can find it on the internet, and this is, what, three in a row now that Keith has just blown people away with. He's someone on the Head On Radio Network chat room said they thought maybe the words were too big for the masses. And I thought, well, maybe some of his words are too big for some Republicans. Certainly if you voted for George Bush, if the words are more than two syllables, they're in trouble. And then, you know, you get the Cheney, and he mentioned Cheney in there. My God. He said Sunday that the ongoing national debate over the war in Iraq is emboldening adversaries to believe they can undermine the resolve of the American people to complete the U.S. mission in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, this no-good SOB, I just wish he'd shut his mouth and go away. I just wish I'd never have to see him again. I wish he'd go into that place where they take him, that undisclosed location, and just leave his ass there. Has there ever, ever been anybody in the government of the United States a more despicable, disgusting individual than Dick Cheney? Anybody? Can you think of anybody? I really can't. I thought and thought and thought about it. Even Tom DeLay, I think, is a saint next to the son of a bitch, Dick Cheney. I really think he is. But, you know, he says on Meet the Press Sunday, and quoting him, he said, they can't beat us in a stand-up fight. They never have, but they're absolutely convinced they can break our will and that the American people don't have the stomach for this fight, Cheney said on NBC's Meet the Press. This is the man that got how many deferments from Vietnam because he had other, quote, priorities? I'm not saying that's a bad thing not to have been in Vietnam, but I'm saying it is a bad thing to have had 5 deferments when you're a hawkish bastard like Dick Cheney and say things like this, that somebody else didn't have a stomach for the fight. The vice president said the U.S. allies in Afghanistan and Iraq have doubts that America will finish the job there. And those doubts are encouraged, obviously, when they see the kind of debate that we've had in the United States. In other words, shut your mouth, you un-American people, you. How dare you bring up problems with the Iraq war in public so our enemies can see that? How dare you? I, Dick Cheney, think that you're giving aid and comfort to the enemy. He wanted to say suggestions, for example, that we should withdraw U.S. forces from Iraq simply feed into the whole notion and validates the strategy of the terrorist. Oh, man. It just me. He makes my blood boil. Junior Bush makes me angry. I suppose there's even some pity there for Junior Bush because he's such a stooge. But Cheney, my God, Dick Cheney. I wonder how many people on 9/11. I mean, here in this country, we were shocked, dismayed, afraid, lots of things going on. Terrible things going on, and a nation virtually stopped in its tracks for a day or two. Well, we started going back, getting back to business as usual, as soon as we possibly could. But I wonder how many people in Iraq and Afghanistan, innocent families, met with their families that night for dinner. I wonder. I wonder how many people, how many families in Afghanistan, in those mud houses of theirs, and the people in Iraq, people out making an honest living, raising their family, doing the best they can to be good people. Wonder how many of them knew that American bombs were going to drop on them and kill them for no reason whatsoever. Wonder how many of them thought that. Wonder how many of them realized that tens of thousands of those people were doomed because some stupid bastard in the White House didn't know any better. Or was too cold-hearted and callous to even care. And they weren't mentioned yesterday. They weren't mentioned. Well. Let's see. Well, we're coming up on 21 minutes after the hour. You've noticed, I'm sure, that we've got a new name for an old enemy, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow, this Islamo-fascist thing that these people are all playing for all it's worth right now. They most certainly are. They're really, 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 really playing it up, and it's interesting for me to see the propaganda that these people spew. It's amazing. Haven't heard much from you today about what you thought about that film. Not a lot of people have called in and said what they... Well, maybe a lot of you didn't watch it. I did read where 82%, I saw a poll, 82% of the people that saw it said it was a propaganda film. Interesting. So, I guess maybe ABC and Richard Mellon-Scaife and all the people who put that little bit together must be a bit disappointed over how it turned out if 82% of the people thought it was propaganda. It wasn't hard. It wasn't hard to see that it was just pure propaganda. That's for certain. It was sprinkled throughout the program. There was a little propaganda here. Did you notice the little sly references about, well, we can't, you know, here in America, we can't look in somebody's laptop, and Oh, here in America, we can't. Did you catch all those little references here and there? The woman in the Philippines, the Filipino police woman said, oh, no, we better look in the laptop. The Americans can't, you know, with their laws. They took every chance they could to take a shot at our laws, our constitutional laws that Bush says his lawyers have looked at. And and by the way, as a little funny aside, I don't know how many of you heard this. One would think that the Speaker of the House, I shouldn't take a shot at somebody like this, but one would think that the Speaker of the House would be well-versed on the customs of America and all the symbols of patriotism we have in the United States of America, our national anthem and things like that. One would think the Speaker of the House would know this, wouldn't you? Maybe some of you have heard this. Ladies and gentlemen, on the Capitol steps, the Honorable, or if you get to looking at his land deals in Illinois close to the new highway that he had put in that we made millions of dollars off his property from, or dishonorable, depending on how you look about it, Dennis Hastert, led the House of Representatives yesterday on the steps of the Capitol building, and I think maybe even the Senate was there, I'm not sure, but led him in the national anthem, and I thought you just might enjoy hearing the Honorable Dennis Hastert sing the national anthem.
Will be accompanied by the United States Marine Corps Band.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you heard that right. The Honorable Dennis Hastert, Speaker of the House of Representatives of the United States of America, does not know the words to the national anthem. Dennis Hastert does not know the words to the national anthem of the United States of America, the Speaker of the House. And he's no Perry Como either, is he? Listen to this. All right. You've suffered enough. Oh, I just had to do that. I don't know who sent that to. Somebody sent me that this morning. I listened to that. No, it can't be. But then I found out it was true. Oh, yeah. Hey, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, is this Guy James down in Florida?
Yes, it is.
This is Eric from Vermont. How are you doing?
Hi, Eric. How are you?
I just voted.
You did?
We have our primaries in Vermont State today. Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
And we get four different ballots. We get one Dem, one Republican. We have another bunch of people called Liberty Union, and then we get a progressive. And took the Democratic ballot and put all the little checks in all the little boxes and then gave them all the rest of the stuff back. We got some contests locally here with state representatives. We got one of the at-large state Senate people who used to own a company down here, and his father did, by the name of Bill Karras, is running at large in November, and he was there, and I've known him for quite a few years, and he's running with an attorney that is in the Senate, and we have a problem with the congressman, and there's a little support we need to give to a man named Peter Welsh here in Vermont, so we're going to be doing that here. He's running on a Democratic ticket, as well as Bernie looks pretty good. Caucuses with Dems. So I did that. You had a question. Forget about the Marquis de Sade treatment you gave your listeners with the Hastert thing. I really think you have a little problem there, Guy. I don't know what you're not interchanging whips, I hope, right? Just kidding, of course. Just kidding.
That's beautiful.
You wanted to get into the idea of the ABC thing. Well, other than a lot of other inaccuracies, which aren't quite as obvious as some of the ones we saw on there, I would like to get in the concept of the financing, not of the $40 million reportedly that it took to produce the movie, but of the sacrifice of airtime that ABC did over the two nights, and the loss of revenue for commercial advertising. which had to be a pretty penny on Sunday and Monday night.
Absolutely.
I'd like to know where ABC is going to duck the losses on the shareholders for that little extravaganza.
Good point. Excellent point. Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't thought about that at all. You suppose the ones that they had on after the show paid the... Nah.
Couldn't possibly. They didn't run them fast enough.
That's right.
It was only about 35, 40 minutes.
So
they couldn't run those floaters that quick.
So where would the revenue come from?
That's a great question.
Let me see. Who is it used to do that bit on TV? Oh, the church lady. Could it be Richard Mellon Scaife? Yes, I think perhaps. I've had several reports today that that is where the money came from. Hey, now, does the people want to know, did you use Diebold voting machines today?
You know, honest to God, I don't know what the hell I used.
some kind of voting machine, okay.
Scanning machine.
Scanning, okay.
Actually, my landlord, arch Republican as he is, he's an honest person, and I don't know what it is. It's a scanning machine. You fill in the block. It is not a Sequoia, I don't think. Honestly, don't know.
Yeah, Sequoia, ES&S, or Diebold?
I feel really stupid going back to the whole 2239 legislation days that I don't know that. You asked me a question, I feel like...
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll all just wait while you run back over there and find out what kind it was, okay? We'll just sit here. Go ahead.
No, I'm sick today, actually, Guy.
Are you?
And you have a guest coming up here, actually,
yeah.
So I haven't kept up on everything here, and I'm really sick. And
all right. Well, hey, you take
it
easy. I'm going to give him a call. In fact, I'm a little behind on doing that right now. So you take care of yourself. I do want to remind you that my wife had some delicious Vermont maple syrup on our pancake this morning.
Well, you got to get the beef stew, the Bob Cook Memorial beef stew recipe sometime.
Well, all right.
All right.
But I want you to know that maple syrup. Thank you.
You have a great show for the rest of it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Hey, we're going to, let me see here. What am I doing? I better make sure what I am doing here. I'm going to take a moment, and I'm going to get a hold of our next guest is what I'm going to do in right now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Hopefully. Well, there's one that doesn't fire too quick.
There's a hole in the world tonight. There's a cloud of fear and sorrow. There's a love is
Hey, and we're back. I think I got some kind of phone trouble going on here. Tony, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Okay. I guess maybe don't know what happened there. We had a wild bit of some kind of fuzz going on over the air there, but I guess it's gone now. Tony Trupiano, ladies and gentlemen, and told you he's going to be with us at 4:30, and by golly, here we are. Tony's in the 11th District. Tony, can I call you back on a different line in just a moment?
Absolutely.
I think the phone company has done us wrong here, so I'll be right back with you.
All righty.
Well, let's just do this the hard way here. Let's just do it right. Well, oh, also my help runs away while I need it here. So, we'll get this done here. We'll get this done. Everybody, be patient with me for one second. Normally don't do this way. But let's see how this works out. I'm afraid Bonnie gave us a real bad one. All right, let's try this again. All right, now we have Tony Trupiano on the line, and that's much better. By golly, you're with us, Tony?
I'm feeling great about it.
Yeah, now it sounds like you're sitting right next to me. I don't know, we had some sort of a bad line there. Tony, tell us about your district, the 11th. Where all is the cover up there?
We are just outside of the city of Detroit, so my district covers a wide variety of demographics, Guy. I've got everything from the working poor to the uber wealthy, and so it makes for interesting dancing on a daily basis.
Is the Grosse Pointe in there?
Grosse Pointe is not in my district. All right. We're just outside of that. But I have some fairly wealthy communities, I have a lot of, blue-collar communities as well. This is considered a true swing district, Guy, in that in the last polling we did, we're actually polling 1-to-1, 50-50.
Well, Tony, I mentioned to my listeners early on the program today, and I have a couple of times, that last time you and I got to talk, we were at that Take Back America conference in Washington. And I think it's such a shame that we've got 435 people in the House of Representatives, and I wish we had everybody in there that's as qualified as you are, is as honest as you are, and as well-spoken as you are, and as committed to the working man as you are. And I got a feeling that if I would shake that tree, not nearly enough of people out of that 435 would come out to with all the great qualifications you've got to be in the House of Representatives. You've spent a lifetime preparing yourself for this.
Well, Guy, thank you for saying that. I think that there are many of us within the sound of our voices right now that are qualified to be a member of Congress. I often get that question, why are you running, or why do you think you're qualified, or, why should we vote for you? You can get as fancy as you want to get. The bottom line answer to the question is that I'm a passionate American that believes in the ideas in which this country was founded, and I have been a contributing member of society for 45 years. I don't know that I need more qualifications than that.
Well,
although I liked your resume of me pretty good there, Guy.
Well, listen, you've been a business owner. You're married. You've helped raise children. Your bio is really what the bio. I've always said, and I'm fumbling over my words here, but I've always said it is the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, and those people that we should have in Congress. We don't need the millionaire guys that live out in Grosse Pointe and all that to be in Congress. We need people with true life experience that can relate to Joe Smith walking down the streets of Detroit, the auto worker that's out of work. We need people that can relate to that, and you're that guy.
Well, I've lived a very difficult life. I mean, hell, I was in radio for 12 years. So
enough said right there.
I've never made a lot of money. I've never been wealthy. I've never... I've never, you know, I've never had the silver spoon, and nor do I want it. And I want to make that clear. I'm very happy being the man that I am. I feel very comfortable, you know, in any social situation with people of all backgrounds. You know, Guy, the bottom line here, and let's, if I may for a second, use the Guy James Show as an example. Over the last 4 years, the imprint, the footprint that you've made on Progressive Talk Radio is profoundly important. And yet, and let's just have an honest discussion. And progressives love you, as they loved my show, and they reach out to us, and they care about us, and we're talking about the things that nobody else will talk about. The one element that the progressive community is missing, and I even hate to say it, but it's got to be said, they don't support us financially.
No.
And, you know, I hate to wake people up this way, but unless people start writing checks to my campaign, unless they start donating to the Guy James Show, unless they start doing the kinds of things that Republicans have been doing for five decades, we're not going to survive this, Guy.
I agree. As that's a tune I've been playing for a while now. And I think the problem is, like you said, the decades, probably 30 years now, the Republicans have been preparing themselves, putting up whatever amount of money that it takes to get the job done. And they've done it in a manner, well, they've used a shotgun approach. You know, people like Richard Mellon-Scaife and all these people put up money, and they haven't told people in the party, well, I want this for a very specific, very narrow reason or anything. They've been willing to do that, and the Democrats have not. And
well, you know, and interestingly, Guy, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but you know, what's interesting about that, you know, we are good, passionate progressives, you and I. We're not looking to make $1.8 million a year. That's not what we're about. We want to make enough money to take care of our families, to put a couple nickels in our pocket, and to continue the activism that we are very proud to do. And, you know, the irony of this is it takes so little money in the bigger picture to make this work. And I just don't know what it's going to take. And I'm sure praying that it doesn't take an 06 election 57 days from now where people go, dang it, I knew I should have written that guy a check. Or, God forbid, a show like yours goes off the air and people say, you know, I meant to write him a check. It's too late now.
Well, before we go any farther, so that we don't forget, and we'll do it again and we're done, you've got some time, don't you?
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. Where can they support your program or your campaign at?
Actually, if they just go to my website, which is www.tonyforcongress2006.com, and that's either F-O-R, the number four, either one works, tonyforcongress2006.com. Right at the top, it shows you if you want to send a check what the address is, if you want to do an online contribution, it's right there. Thank you for asking.
Well, folks, this is serious business. This is serious business, and I spoke to Tony earlier today. We've got a campaign here. I've got a guy here that he and Tony could be brothers. They even look like. Robert Neal's running for Congress here against Connie Mack, and a lot of people know who Connie Mack is. Connie Mack has spent, if he had to spend $5 million on this campaign, he would. But he doesn't have to spend very much because he knows the Democrats aren't going to raise a lot for Robert Neal. Are you in that kind of a position?
Well, you know, my opponent obviously is outraising me. I mean, any incumbent, Republican or Democrat, they're going to have an easier time raising money.
Sure.
As an incumbent. All that being said, I have, you know, and I got to tell you for a minute, I need to recognize my staff. Guy, I have five core people that work on my campaign. They have built a grassroots organization that is getting national attention because we've done it the way everybody should do it. We go to somebody and we say, we know you care. Will you help us win? They say yes. We plug them in. We now have over 700 volunteers on my campaign.
Wow.
We are knocking more doors. I would put my effort up against anybody in the country. We are kicking some major league butt in that regard.
Terrific.
And I'm very proud of my staff for that. I can't take complete credit for that, obviously.
Wow, 700. That's fabulous. Hey, let's talk a little bit about about your district and your views on it. Well, the people in your district, how are you going to represent them about the war in Iraq? How do you feel about it?
Well, it's time to get out, Guy, and I think we need to do it responsibly. I am not a cut-and-run Democrat. As a matter of fact, I've yet to meet one, so if there's one out there, I'd like to know where they are.
Exactly.
You know, we need to be out of there by the end of 2007. There's a lot that goes into that formula, but I'm going to keep it real simple. The Iraqi people tell us they want us gone. The Iraqi government told us a month ago that they're ready to take care of themselves. You know, let's just you know, kind of force the issue now. It's time to start bringing some of our troops home. By the end of 2007, which is, I think, a very comfortable window to transition our troops out of there, to transition more of their troops into very important roles, to get the UN more engaged, and to bring our young men and women home. It has to stop, and it has to stop now.
Absolutely. Well, I agree completely with you on that. A big issue, most certainly in your district, is jobs. I happen to know that you know, Michigan on the whole has gotten hit very, very hard, and Flint, and probably your district, and most, well, I know your district's got hit hard for jobs. You've come up with a plan that I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it. In fact, I'm fascinated. I hope you'll explain a little bit about job security, and you've got a plan for economic security, where you can come up with a real wage insurance for people. Do you want to explain that?
Well, yes. It's very simple. I think that people should be able to invest part of their paycheck, if they like, into a wage insurance. So as an example, I'll make this real simple. Let's say you're making $50 an hour and you get downsized. And here in Michigan, and especially in the 11th Congressional District, that's been a real problem. But let's say the job you find, Guy, only pays $25. That wage insurance would make up the difference for a period of time. And, you know, one of the challenges that people have when they have to transition from one career to another, or, God forbid, they get outsourced or downsized or fired or the shop closes, we have no transition time anymore. We know the federal government, led by the Republicans, Guy, will not provide more unemployment compensation. And to me, that's a mortal sin. I don't know how a party that can supposedly base itself on values turn its back on people that have nothing. I just don't understand how we can do that in any way and call ourselves, you know, compassionate or responsible. Those aren't values that reflect how I believe. And so we need to give people a transition period. And again, they've invested in that period. It's like buying car insurance. You know, it's not like they haven't, you know, there's a reason that we do this. We do this so that when we go to make that transition, if I have to take a lesser paying job in the interim, that my family isn't devastated by that. And I've seen this guy over and over and over again, especially as I've knocked doors around the district. Very proud people that just don't know where to turn at this point. Why not give people a little comfort? Why not give people a little optimism, a little hope? Is there anything wrong with that? I don't think so.
In this day and age where a lot of people are a month, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, one paycheck away from being destitute, two or three paychecks away from losing their homes. I think it's a terrific plan that you've worked out here. I really do. And
and we're in the process, and Guy, as soon as I'm done with it, which will be very shortly, I am actually putting together an employment program. I mean, a way to really grow jobs in the country, not just in my district, in the entire country. You know, I want to remind this audience, not that I need to, that as a congressman, yes, you represent the interests of your district, but you also represent the interests of your country. You are sworn in to protect the Constitution. The Constitution covers everybody, man, woman, and child. So I don't go to Washington, D.C., thinking that I just represent this little corner of the world. I go to Washington, D.C. as a congressman that wants to protect everybody's rights, that wants to give everybody opportunity.
Well, that particular plan, I think, would be absolutely great for America. And if you get elected, I hope that you can spread that around Congress and get some support behind you. Because, like you say, there's probably some details to be worked out. But it's a great plan, especially, you know, the transition time and all that, like you mentioned. What about health care? Where are you on health care?
Well, it's time for that single-payer system we keep not wanting to talk about, but it's time to have a real discussion about health care in this country. You know, we now know, as you're well aware, a couple weeks ago the poverty numbers came out again. Right, piggybacking on that was the number of uninsured Americans. That number's up to somewhere over 48 million now. At a very minimum, we should be covering everybody prenatal to 18 years old. No question we need to be doing that. But I think whether it's the Conyers health care plan or some of the others that are out there, there's enough reason to be optimistic that not only you and I, but corporate America is ready to talk about a national health care system that proactively addresses the concerns. You know, and Guy, the thing that I absolutely love about a single-payer health care system, we actually have a model for it. It's called Medicare. And it was supposed to be our national health care system in 1964. Unfortunately, it was another government program that was never completely enacted. But that's what it was there for. But we know, I mean, it's the most successful government. Medicaid and Medicare are the best and most, it's the best and most successful government program we've ever had. We know it works. So we just need to extend that. We need to find some common ground, and we need to start transitioning people. This is not going to be, and for people to think that we'll pass legislation and then 3 days later everybody will be covered, that's a misnomer.
Right.
But the truth is, over a period of 5 years, it may even take 10 years, but at the end of that time, every American will be covered. And ultimately, and think about what that does for the economy.
Oh, absolutely. And I have
always felt, Guy, that it's unfair to expect employers to take care of the health care costs of a country. I don't think it's fair to employers. It's just time to have a real, not discussion, because we've been discussing health care for decades. It's time we do something about it.
And doing it incrementally absolutely is the way to go. You're right. A lot of people think, okay, we're going to pass this and everybody. No, first of all, economically, we can't do it all at once. But like you say, start out with prenatal up to 18, and then phase in another segment in a couple of the 3 years whenever we can afford it, and then finally have everybody on board. It's a lot more simple than people.
You know, struggling moms and dads should not have to make a choice between taking their kid to the doctor who has a fever of 103 and making sure that there's milk in the fridge. They should never have to make that choice. And as you and I both know, emergency rooms have become the new doctor's office in America. And, you know, our healthcare system is sick. It's chronically ill. And the industry itself doesn't care to reform it. We know the lobbyists don't care to reform it. So why don't...
Oh, I think we lost Tony there. Are you there, Tony? We're going to call him right back. That's what we're going to do. Don't what happened. We lost our phone line there. Bear with me for a moment here. Nothing like live radio. There we go. Let's try this again. All right. Let's see if we get Tony again here. Sorry about this. Mr. Phone Company is not cooperating with us today. Hey, Tony, we got cut off here. Hang on. I'm going to put you back on. Mr. Phone Company's not doing a good job at all today. Nah. Anyway, you're back with us now, right?
It's some NSA people, I tell you guys.
Oh, no, please. Don't say that. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, when you start talking about giving America hope, talking about possibilities, talking about, I was talking to a group a few weeks ago, and somebody had asked me the question, well, you know, you're a liberal talk show host, and, you know, aren't they going to beat you up for being a liberal and liberal this and liberal that? And I said, okay, well, let's define what liberal means, liberal, progressive, whatever you want to put it. I said, in my world, liberal means that we believe that in the year 2006, a woman has a right to make her own choices. If being liberal means that I want to make sure that every man, woman, and child has health care, if liberal means that I want to protect the economic interest of my community and make them safer, if liberal means that I want to hire more police officers, then yeah, I'm liberal.
Absolutely. And, you know, they've done all they can to demonize that word. And I know you're the same way about it. I'm not one that's going to sit back. I will say I'm a liberal Democrat that's progressive. But I'm not going to walk away from that label because the liberal label, because I am, and I'm going to stay with it always. Tony, you've got how many more days yet?
57 days and counting, guy.
All right, and it's Tony for Congress, 2006.
Right.
.com. And I want to also mention that to all of you folks, as you might know, Tony, living in the Detroit area, Tony's a tried and true union man. So all of you union people, you throw some bucks in there. Tony's a man that'll represent unions. And
well, let me make this real simple, guy. For a $10 donation, we've got a fun little bumper sticker that we're going to send people. $10. We're not looking for thousands, just $10, and we're going to send you a nice bumper sticker from the campaign.
All right. That's TonyForCongress2006.com. Everybody go there. Tony, thanks so much for being on the program today. The best of luck to you. We'll check in with you again before Election Day.
You're the best. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Tony.
Alrighty.
Bye now. There's a guy. I'm telling you. If you've never met Tony, Tony's a great guy. He really is. He's a lot of fun. Got a great personality, a bubbly personality, and he's exceptionally intelligent, well spoken. He is a good union man. He represents the common man as well as anybody ever could, and he won't run from a political fight. I'll tell you that right now. So. Tony is someone that deserves your support, and help him out. I don't care if you don't live in the 11th District of Florida. Send him a few bucks. He's in a tough race right there. He's in one. He will win, and yes, he will send the bumper sticker to Florida. Somebody asked on here. He's in a tough race, and you can help. Now, you stop and think about this. Those of you that think, well, you know, I'm only going to support my local congressman. If we want to take the Congress back and you want your local congressman to have the opportunity to get on a good committee and maybe a chairmanship of a committee, first we've got to take it back. So don't think about just your own district. Think about the district in another state and around and do all you can. If you got a few dollars you can spare to do that, please do. It'd be very, very well spent. Tony Trupiano, and we will have him on again before the election. Yeah, Tony's a heck of a guy. How many times can I say that? But he is. Oh, my. We've just got a couple of minutes left in the program today. And I tell you, we had so much we're going to talk about, and I will tomorrow. We'll get to it. I've got a stack of material that I want to get to, and it seems like I'm getting further and further behind on it because every day I get started. You know me, get running off on a tangent someplace, and well, that's just life. When you got a microphone in front of you, you know, you just can't resist it. A thought comes in your head, and you start talking about it, and you're done for. You should blow the whole plan. I don't often plan a program. I really don't. I have material that I get ready, and research material and that sort of thing, but I don't often sit down and say, okay, I'm going to do this at this time and this at that time, and maybe I ought to, huh? There's probably a whole bunch of you sitting there right now saying, yeah, you really ought to, but we do have some structure to it anyway. Listen, I do want to remind all of you that our program is a listener-supported program, and you can do that at www.theguyjamesshow.com. And I do want you to know, and I think sometimes that we sit in front of a microphone and fail to recognize the fact that it is you that is the reason that we're sitting here in this chair doing what we do. If there was nobody there listening, why, it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference what I'm sitting here doing on my end. So I appreciate you all being there every day. I really do. And I appreciate the feedback that I get from you and the emails and you folks that participate on the chat room and send us research information and all that, I appreciate it very, very much. And I pay attention to it. I pay close attention to it. So this is a program that you can truly participate in. You don't have to wait an hour to get in here and talk. We've got 6 phone lines, and you can usually get in when you need to. So I just want you to know that I appreciate my audience so very, very much, and I appreciate all the activism that you do, and I appreciate your participation in the program. So anyway.